Medicaid Advisory Committee, and we will also be having a public hearing as a part of this meeting. And what I'd like to do to start off is begin with introductions. We'll have the Medicaid Advisory Committee members who are seated here in the front three rows. It's three rows. Yeah. And we'll have them introduce themselves and then everyone else. And let's start off with Sylvia.
Thank you. My name is Sylvia Borella, and I am the CEO for the Santa Fe Recovery Center, and I'm also representing the New Mexico Behavioral Health Providers Association.
He gave us a mic.
Oh. Good afternoon. Carolina Anderson with the LifeLink, and I am here on behalf of the Behavioral Health Planning Council.
Larry Chandler, pediatrician. I'm here on behalf of not only pediatricians and other physicians, but the kids.
I'm Ruth Hoffman. I'm here with Lutheran Advocacy Ministry New Mexico.
Gary Alseptian, CEO of Disability Rights New Mexico.
Mary Eden, Presbyterian, and I'm representing the Centennial Care NCOs.
Carol Lynch, I am with the College of Nursing at the University of New Mexico, and I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner.
I'm Dale Tinker. I represent New Mexico Pharmacists Association.
Eileen Good, New Mexico Primary Care Association.
Hello, Jeff Dye with the New Mexico Hospital Association.
Megan Lorino from the New Mexico Association for Home and Hospice Care.
Bill Jordan with New Mexico Voices for Children.
Joey Glenn, Advocacy for Home Care and Hospice.
Scott Alonka with Children's Dorsey.
Michael Parks with Senior Citizens Law Office.
Wayne Lindstrom, Behavioral Health Services Division.
Tina Regler, Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Carolyn Griego, Western Sky.
Dylan French, a student with Dale Tinker.
Sam Brandt with X-Ray Associates.
Mike McGlory, X-Ray Associates.
Jenny Solly, Legislative Finance Committee.
Buco Estrada with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty.
William Townley with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty.
Nancy Rodriguez with the New Mexico Alliance for School-Based Healthcare.
Ellen Klein with the Disability Coalition.
Jim Jackson, Disability Rights New Mexico.
Colleen Fong, Gilead Sciences.
Jason Smith, Gilead Sciences.
Renee Ennis, Tricor Reference Laboratories.
Colin Bio, Health Action New Mexico.
Brianna Roper Willis with Western State Community Care.
Vicki Kowal, National Multiple Sclerosis Society.
Liz Locator, Presbyterian Health Plan.
Heather Ingram, Presbyterian Health Plan.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Hapgood, Behavioral Health Services Division.
Hi, this is Megan Pfeffer, Behavioral Health, or I'm sorry, Medical Assistance Division.
Change race.
Good afternoon. Michael Spanier representing Hyde and Associates.
Good afternoon. Jason Sanchez, Medical Assistance Division.
Good afternoon. Michael Murphy, Independent Living Resource Center.
I believe that captured just about everybody. We do have a couple of staff members at each entrance. Maybe if you could just holler out who you are.
Jennifer Vindall, Medical Assistance Division.
Yes.
Alicia Rothman, Medical Assistance Division.
Orlando Buskis, Medical Assistance Division.
Valerie Tapia, Medical Assistance Division.
And Kathy Slaterhoff, Medical Assistance Division.
Okay. And we have our director of the Medical Assistance Division
here. Good afternoon. Nicole Cabo, Director of the Medical Assistance Division.
And I'm Larry Martinez with Presbyterian Medical Services, and I'm the chairman of the Medicaid Advisory Committee. Okay, I think we got everyone. So, is anyone on the phone? Yeah, let's check. Has anyone called in? Hearing nothing but silence, I'm assuming no one's there. Okay. What I'd like to do then is go to item number 2 on our agenda, which is the approval of the agenda, which was previously distributed to the members of the committee. Are there any changes or modifications anyone would like to make to the agenda from the committee? Seeing there are none, I will entertain a motion to approve the agenda. So moved by Carol, seconded by Carolyn. So all those in favor of the motion to approve the agenda as presented, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Is anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, the agenda is formally approved. And then I'd like to go to item number 3, approval of the minutes of the meeting. Before I do that, I would like to compliment Alicia for a wonderful job in terms of detail on the minutes of the meeting. Alicia, I've said this before, but I think it bears repeating now. Sometimes our recorder makes us seem more intelligent than we really are. And you did a wonderful job of them. But are there any corrections or modifications to be made to the minutes? Yes, Sylvia.
I'm listed as being absent, although I'm also listed as being present.
Okay. Which one were you?
I was present.
You were present, okay. Okay, then we'll make that correction, that you'll be listed as present. Any other changes, modifications to the minutes of the meeting? Okay, it's moved by Mary Eden to approve the minutes. Do I have a second to that motion? Seconded by Carol Luna Anderson. So all those in favor of the motion to approve the minutes as previously distributed and as corrected, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. Any abstentions? Okay, the minutes of the meeting have now been adopted. Okay. Which brings us now to item number 4 on the agenda, and I will turn it over to Nicole Cabo, the director of the Medical Assistance Division, and Jason Sanchez, the deputy director, for a 2019 legislative session update.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you want to come up here, Jason?
Sure.
We've got a seat for you.
It's cozy.
There you go. That's good.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, good afternoon, folks. And actually, I've seen a number of you over the past 2 weeks at other meetings, so I'm apologizing in advance for duplicative reporting here. But for those of you that we haven't seen, we just wanted to provide a short update on the outcome of the legislature. We overall were very pleased with the outcome and our budget following the session. We felt like folks really understood what the priorities were that we're hoping to address in the coming years, and we were able to get the resources that we need to try to progress the vast majority of those priorities. I think that the first of those priorities that I would obviously be remiss in this crowd if I did not bring up is the intention to increase rates across the board. And Jason's going to give a couple of notes on that when he goes through the budget piece, and then I'll give some more detail after that. But I will say that the provider rate priorities include behavioral health, primary care, and rural and frontier areas. The fact that additional legislation was passed to increase rates for nursing facilities and hospitals allows us to devote even more of those resources that we thought we were going to have to spread all the way across to those three priorities. So we were very happy about that. The second piece that I'll just note before I let Jason jump into the numbers that I'm assuming a good number of folks here would be interested in is the Medicaid buy-in. So there they are. We There were some changes to the bill throughout the course of the session, and unfortunately the bill itself did not pass, but the governor and our office stood in strong support and still stand in strong support of the intention behind that bill. So we will be pursuing and looking at in greater depth what our options are to expand coverage to the remaining folks that are not eligible for any of our existing programs in the state over this next year. We'll be meeting with the legislature in the interim, and then hopefully we'll have together a plan. We'll have together a plan that includes the complete actuarial analysis that MNAT wasn't able to finish in their work before we go back to the session in January. So I will say first steps there. We did get some money out of the junior bill after some very intense efforts by many folks that we appreciate. We'll be hiring an FTE whose full focus will be to work on the Medicaid. We'll have to think of another name for it instead of just calling it Medicaid buy-in going forward for the rest of the year. But we'll be looking at all of our options, including 1331 and 1332 waivers to potentially expand Medicaid coverage to those populations that were highlighted in the bill. And also look at making sure that we have affordable coverage for all of those, including those who may already have coverage with the intention of trying to disrupt the market as little as possible. There was a memorial that gave us the legislative authority to pursue those waivers, which puts us in a good position as well. As far as the timing of that, I think we'll have to see what comes out of the analysis and research this year to determine whether or not we pursue one of those before the session or if we would be meeting with the legislature and coming forward with a proposal that they would approve before we'd pursue that actual waiver application being submitted to CMS. So other than that, since the session has ended, we've been working closely with the governor's office on all of the bills that have passed. Of those that passed, Governor Lujan Grisham has signed 35 bills where MAD is either the lead division or as a partner with our folks in behavioral health and ISD. So that is where we stand coming out of the session, and I'll let Jason talk about the finances.
Sure. Good afternoon to you all. I'll start off by speaking about House Bill 2. Just a quick note, we do not have a full-fledged projection for you all for today's Medicaid Advisory Committee. We're in the process of putting that together, and because of the timing of how this meeting occurred, we're not due to have a full-fledged projection due until the end of the month. So I don't have new and updated projection numbers to share with you, but I'll touch briefly on kind of where we are in the context of the budget. Yes, question.
I got to ask that when you do get that, since there'll be a time you need
to when you do get the projection done, we could be sent to all of us, so since it'll be sooner rather than our next meeting.
Will do. So in terms of House Bill 2, we received an appropriation of $985.5 million, which was $9.3 million below our latest projection, which was based upon December data. That is an increase of $51.9 million of where we are currently in FY19. And there were a few language items that were specifically inserted right beyond our appropriations. Things like we'll provide a rate adjustment, including personal care services, $500,000 for FQHC rates, and $200,000 for graduate medical education that were in our specific section of our appropriation in House Bill 2. In addition to that, there was a $34 million appropriation, which was in Section 5 in the back of the bill, and that is to actually increase inpatient and outpatient hospital rates. A couple of other bills that have some funding associated with them that we're tracking as of this moment. Senate Bill 246, that is the healthcare quality surcharge bill. That is something that is the goal is to actually identify an amount that potential nursing homes and or ICFIDs would pay as a surcharge towards the state government, and then those dollars would in turn be matched and utilized to increase rates. Senate Bill 536 and House Bill 548, which, Nicole mentioned previously, were the junior bill appropriations and some of the dollar amounts that were there, which directly affect the Medicaid program. a total of $142,000 to study the Medicaid buy-in, $257,000 and $150,000 for GME programs. And House Bill 480 was the actual GME program bill associated with that, and that also did pass. A couple of things we're tracking in terms of our latest projection. Enrollment seems to be flattening slightly. Again, nothing huge in terms of the differences from what we were projecting previously. PMPMs are bouncing around a little bit over the last couple of months due to the shifting membership that were and the fact that members were allowed to shift over the last 3 months between MCOs to find the MCO that meets their most needs. So we're tracking some shifting in dollars in terms of PMPMs across the managed care organizations. But other than that, we don't expect to see huge swings from where we were previously projecting in terms of the enrollment and the actual managed care costs. One item that we are seeing a projected decrease in need is the items associated with Centennial Care 2.0. That was that line item that was at the bottom of the projection. We are seeing a reduced need as we move forward throughout learning more about how these programs are going to be operated. So we are, in fact, seeing a decreased need in that particular area of the projection model. But again, we're not talking about tens of millions of dollars. We're talking about a few million dollars here and there. So when we do come out with a projection towards the end of the month, I don't expect it to be vastly different from where we are currently projecting. But that's why we're looking at all the data and all the information, and we'll have that available to you as soon as we have it complete. Are there any questions about any of the appropriations or any of the current status of the projection?
Seeing there none. Thank you very much, Jason. And we'll proceed. Were there any more? Yes.
Yes, I'm going to make just a couple more comments if you don't mind about the session. So, as Jason outlined, we did end up in a good place with the funding that we received, and so I know that the question hanging for most folks is what money will go where, particularly with regard to the rates. So the intention for the department is to phase this in over 3 years and try and increase rates over the three-year period. I believe the largest of the increases would come in this first year. I think that's safe to say. And I unfortunately can't give as satisfactory an answer as I would like to tell you all exactly where all the dollars will go. We're still in the process of evaluating how we can break up the funding into each of the categories that we intend to increase rates in. But I will say that the focus remains those that we outlined during the session and that I just mentioned previously. So PCPs, behavioral health, and rural and frontier. And when I say rural and frontier, we won't be going to the level of parsing out provider codes by rural areas or geographic areas. What I mean there is really focus on FQHCs and looking at making sure that we have a fair playing field there. So most of you that we talked to over the course of the session can expect that we'll be coming to you in the very near future to outline exactly what those increases will be. We do intend to implement the vast majority of them beginning of July when we adjust rates. There are a couple that wouldn't go into place in July for logistical reasons, and then a couple that update on, they have a regular time frame in which they update that we would stick to in updating those. Is there, can you give an example? I'm trying to think of the one that...
FQHCs is an example.
Yeah,
those are October 1st.
Thanks. Right, October 1st. So, for example, those that increase on a different time frame than the normal July one on a regular basis, those would be the only ones that we wouldn't see happening in July. Again, I know that doesn't give folks a lot of satisfaction. I'm sure everyone wants to know where we stand, but we're meeting weekly with David and our actuaries to determine the best way to divvy up the funding. And David has stated, Secretary Scrace, that our intention will be to put out a public statement as to how that funding will be divvied up. So you all should see that in the very near future, given that the rates have to be increased in July. So, are there questions?
Yes. Jeff?
Mr. Chair, I do have a question. So, I guess I'm not understanding the mechanics. We just passed a fiscal year 20 appropriation, and you're talking about a three-year phasing, though. So, how is the money being allocated if we have a specific one-year appropriation?
So the specific one-year appropriation will be implemented in this fiscal year. What Nicole was referring to is our intent to raise rates over a multi-year period. And Dr. Scrace mentioned that during the legislative session in his testimony towards LFC about both the House Appropriations and Finance and the Senate Finance Committees, that his plan is to raise rates over a period of time.
Great. And I'm sorry, that probably did sound confusing the way that I stated it, but the funding that was awarded for this session, appropriated for this session, will be utilized in this fiscal year. I think the intention in mentioning that is that, of course, there will be folks whose expectations are met and also those who won't be. As much as we will try to make folks happy across the board, of course, that won't always happen. So wanting to make clear that we will be working over a three-year period to increase rates so that this is not the only go-around, this is not the only opportunity for folks to see increases.
So is it safe to say that there will likely be additional increases in subsequent appropriation requests?
Funding willing, yes.
Okay. Okay, good. So I think that makes it a little more understandable. Then. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions from members of the committee? Yes. Richard?
You mentioned $51.9 million increase. Is the $34 million part of that, or the $34 million in addition to that? And then also the $7.5 million, I think, was the amount added to the DD waiver. Is all of that in the 51.9?
No, thank you for asking that question. It is not part of that 51.9. 51.9 is just our base appropriation increase. The $34 million would be above and beyond that, and the 7.7 for DD would be above and beyond that.
Just one piece of clarification, the reference to FQHC, Federally Qualified Health Centers.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, well, Jason, thank you very much for your contribution to the report. And thank you, Nicole. We'll go to item number 5 on the agenda, director's update. So, Nicole, the floor is yours with the MCO Centennial Care update.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, again, apologies to those of you who've already heard this. There's a lot of you in here, familiar faces from the last two meetings. I will say I wanted to thank, and I did thank the MCOs in our meeting last week, coming in new right after a large transition like I did. It has been a pleasure to work with our partners there. They have been responsive and working with us, especially through some difficult member issues that have come up, and so we really appreciate that. There were also a lot of data requests throughout the session, and folks worked really quickly to make sure that we had what we needed, so we really appreciate that. With regards to the transition itself, things seem to be going very smoothly at this point. We have not had any loud noise. I'm looking at Kathy over there, lingering in the past couple of months, so we're really happy to hear that. With regard to the 1115 waiver, as most of you know, on December 14th, CMS approved HSD's request to extend New Mexico's 1115 demonstration waiver. However, we are still in the process of working through the approval of the special terms and conditions, STCs, with them. We had expected to receive final feedback from them about a month ago. I'm looking at Jennifer. Actually much earlier than that. But at the last check-in that we had, we expected to receive feedback about a month ago. So we continue to talk to them and check in on that status, but are awaiting final approval. It was concerning to us because we did not know if that impacted the actual effective date of the waiver and the many timelines that we have associated with that. So they did clarify to us that the effective date of the waiver is actually January 1st, 2019, and will run through December 23rd, 2023. So while we're still in the process of working through those STCs, the waiver is in effect, as are the timelines associated with it. On March 1st, HSD sent an amendment to New Mexico's 1115 waiver with five requests. I think most of you are familiar with these, and there was a press announcement about three of them, but just wanted to make sure to highlight the other two to make sure that folks were aware of those as well. So first, we requested the removal of $8 copays for non-preferred prescription medications and non-emergency use of emergency departments. We requested the removal of the premium requirements outlined in the initial waiver submission. We requested to reinstate the three-month retroactive eligibility eligibility coverage. And the last two, which were not in the press statement, so we want to make sure to highlight them for folks. We requested to increase the number of allocations for members who do not meet standard Medicaid financial eligibility but do meet clinical criteria for long-term care services in the community. And lastly, we requested to expand the number of counties for the home visiting pilot, which would allow HSD to expand the program based on member outcomes in the first couple of counties that we're piloting in. So that will also be highlighted in the public comment section that will follow, but we, since we'll be allowing folks to head out if they wanted to, we did want to highlight that here. So on March 1st, notice of public comment was issued, and comments are accepted through 5 p.m. Today. And there was a public hearing on Wednesday, April 10th in Cruces, and this is the second public hearing. Last note here, if members were auto-enrolled with a managed care organization or selected an MCO and had some level of dissatisfaction or a provider issue and decided to change, they were allowed to change until March 31st without any cause. But after March 31st, members are only allowed to change with a cause request. I think in general, that's our update on Centennial Care. I got asked this question at the Medical Society, and we talked about it in our MCO meeting, so I think also worth mentioning here, just at a high level, and if there's questions, we could certainly dig in deeper. We're well aware that there are ongoing contract negotiations with CHS, community, help me, folks, community health systems. Community health systems in the southern region, and their ongoing, bless you, contract negotiations. After Centennial Care 1.0 sunsetted, became 2.0, all the MCOs were required to recontract with all providers. Almost all of those are complete. We're in good shape. However, those negotiations are ongoing. And because there have been a number of instances in which we've heard from folks about concerns from members since those negotiations have not been completed, we are tracking that closely and are putting together some public commentary. I think we have until the end of the month for folks to come to an agreement there. If not, we're going to be working closely with the MCOs to transition those members that are seeing providers within that system. To be clear, one of the MCOs is contracted with that system, and then the other two MCOs do have providers that meet the distance requirements within those same regions. However, may not be directly contracted with CHS. So we'll be putting out, a press statement about that, depending on the outcome, and have mass member communication being worked up, as well as notification to all the call centers to make sure that it's as smooth a process as possible for the members. Did I miss anything I should say there, Kathy? Okay. All right. So that is Centennial Care update. Are there any questions?
Then we'll proceed. Item 6 on the agenda, okay, which is amendment presentation.
Yes.
And I understand you wanted to at least offer members an opportunity to leave if they wish to.
I do. It's very duplicative of my quick summary there. That's the summary of the content for the meeting today. So if there are other questions of things that we did not address, if you're not here for the public comment period to discuss the amendments to the waiver and have questions that you'd want to bring up, please feel free to do so now. And then I think we'd be happy to dismiss members if they'd like to leave before the public comment.
However, some of you find this so riveting that you cannot leave. You're certainly welcome to stay also.
Yes. That's true.
It has been, right? Okay. I don't see anyone leaving. Oh, are you leaving, Sylvia?
It's just public comment for the waiver.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? The record will show you were present also.
Present and not
Okay. Then Nicole, the floor is yours.
Okay. All right, folks. I'm going to abbreviate this since I just said most of it. Is that all right? Is that going to put us outside the rules? No?
No.
Okay. All right. Okay, so as I mentioned, the department is accepting comments from the public about the Medicaid program known as Centennial Care 2.0. Comments are accepted through 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, Monday, April 15th, 2019, which is today. There was a public hearing in Las Cruces on Wednesday, April 10th, and today is the second public hearing, Monday, April 15th, 2019. It's been a long day, folks. Comments are being accepted as well through email, hsd-publiccomment@state.nm.us, or by mail at the Human Services Department address. For more information about the waiver and the public comment process, you can go onto HSD's website on the Centennial Care 2.0 page. We appreciate folks' attendance, certainly, and look forward to comments. The presentation is a summary of the changes that are proposed to the 1115 waiver, which was released on February 28th, 2019, and is available for review on the website. As part of the formal hearing process, we will accept and record all comments, and responses to the comments received will be documented in a section of the final waiver amendment application that's submitted to CMS at the end of April. I will remind and ask folks who are giving comment to please clearly state your name and who you're with so that we can preserve that. The proposed timeline for the waiver amendment process is outlined on the screen in front of you. It would be effective 7/1/2019. The state's goals for amending the demonstration for New Mexico's Medicaid managed care program include the most effective, efficient health care possible for covered New Mexicans and to continue the health care delivery reforms that were initiated during the previous demonstration period. Okay, so I outlined these just now at a high level, but I will go into them in more detail here briefly, but there are five amendments that we are requesting to make to the waiver and have submitted those to CMS. The first of which is that we remove all copayments from Centennial Care. As currently approved, the Centennial Care 2.0 waiver would allow copayments for $8 for non-emergency use of the hospital emergency department and $8 for non-preferred prescription drugs for most Centennial Care members. HSD does not intend to implement these copayments and seeks to remove the authority from the waiver. The second request is that we remove premiums for members of the adult expansion group. The current waiver requires HSD to implement monthly premiums of $10 for members of the adult expansion group who would have income above 100% of the federal poverty level effective July 1st, 2019. HSD does not intend to implement these premiums and seeks removal of the requirement. Thirdly, we would like to reinstate retroactive eligibility. The current waiver includes a phase-out of the three-month retroactive Medicaid coverage period for non-pregnant adults covered under Centennial Care. In calendar year 2019, the retroactive period is limited to 1 month. That is currently in effect. The calendar year 2020 waiver requires HSD to eliminate retroactive coverage in its entirety. HSD does not intend to proceed with eliminating retroactive coverage in 2020 and seeks federal approval to reinstate full retroactive coverage for all affected individuals as quickly as possible. Our proposed effective date for reinstating coverage is July 1st. We've been working with our IT department to ensure that that's a feasible timeline for us to turn around the policy that's been implemented thus far. They ensure us that it is. Fourth is community benefit services. Centennial Care expanded the availability of the community benefit services to individuals who qualify for full Medicaid coverage and meet a nursing facility level of care, NIFLOC, by eliminating the requirement for a waiver allocation in order to access the full suite of community benefit services. HSD has continued to provide access to community benefit for certain members who do not meet the standard Medicaid financial eligibility, establishing 4,289 slots in the waiver. Current allocation efforts by HSD are keeping up with attrition. However, we anticipate the need for additional slots will increase. We're proposing an increase in the number of slots by 1,500 through the waiver amendment. Lastly, we are requesting to amend the home visiting pilot section of the waiver. The home visiting pilot program focuses on prenatal care, postpartum care, and early childhood development in state-designated counties. We are proposing to remove the restriction on the number of counties in which the pilot is being implemented, as well as the number of potential members who can be served by home visiting services. Additional counties providing home visiting services will be designated by HSD throughout the term of the waiver. We're still working with CMS on how we would define that. They'll obviously be asking us for additional detail, and we'll be happy to share that with all of you all as well once we have a greater level of detail. Thank you for attending and for your participation, and we would now like to request feedback for the record related to the information presented.
Again, please identify yourselves if you wish to provide us with feedback. Okay, okay, we've got one back here, and then Dale will come back to you.
Hi, good afternoon. Is this on? Can you hear me? My name is William Townley. I'm a staff attorney at the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, and we would like to stand in support of the amendments that are being set forth. Looking first to co-payments and premiums, we stand in full support of the removal of provisions that would be considered detrimental to low-income families, as well as anything that would result in the loss of coverage of thousands of New Mexicans. Similar goes for our support of retroactive coverage and the reinstatement of that eligibility. It protects families as a vital safety net for debt, as well as ensures that providers are compensated for services provided. We also wanted to provide a little bit more comment regarding the home visiting pilot. We are definitely in support of expansion of that pilot, but we would love to see so that it's done in areas of high need in the state of New Mexico. Many counties that are not currently selected have demonstrated need of early childhood intervention. It's currently not being set forth. This is an opportunity for a pilot to really study questions of infrastructure and staffing need in those areas to ensure that those families are receiving services that are known to provide an outcome for their health and education. Next thing is, should be done in a culturally and linguistically appropriate manner. Every home in New Mexico is not the same, and ensuring that this pilot can look to make sure that every home is provided a comfortable and reasonable home visiting service is something the state should look to do. And finally, we should do so that this program is overseen and expanded through the oversight of home visiting providers as well as stakeholders in early childhood. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for your remarks. Okay, I think we've got Dale here, and then we've got an individual in the back.
Okay. I'm Dale Tinker. I represent New Mexico Pharmacists Association, and my comment is to say thank you for implementing these changes. I'm a firm believer that co-pays are designed to be a barrier to care, and so getting rid of those I think is a really good move. And I also think I'm charging a $10 premium or so for folks that are almost poverty level doesn't make any sense in terms of administration, so I appreciate that as well. I think the changes are very positive, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dale. Again, I think we had to stay back in back here. Right.
Thank you. And again, I'm Vicki Kowal with the National MS Society for Sclerosis. We submitted our letter via email today in support of all the March 1st, 2019 amendments, and we thank you for those amendments. There's two things that are really important. So one is the waiver slot expansion, and then the second would be the cost share, the premiums and copays. Related to the waiver slots, people with MS are diagnosed usually between age 20 to 50. And women are diagnosed more often than men, but we certainly have many men living with MS. 60%, that is 60%, of these people leave the workforce within 10 years. And that is due to disability and disease progression. So MS impacts cognition and also the physical aspects as well. Nursing homes are not appropriate for people who are between the ages of 20 to 50. Not appropriate. But because of the low access to the waiver program, we have a really long wait list. We have mothers and fathers and children living in nursing homes so they can get Medicaid quicker. And so it allows them then to get the waiver at home ultimately. And it's just not appropriate for that, but it is the quicker way for them to get the waiver. On the other hand, we have people with MS who are living at home without any home care support, without any personal care. So their caregivers would be spouse, would be a child, we're talking teenagers even, sometimes even younger, and then the parent. This is also not appropriate, it puts everyone at risk. It also really impacts employment of the spouse and his or her ability to work while caring for this person. And so that opening up more slots allows our people who are living with MS to access really life-changing and life-saving services. So this is would be outstanding to have these extra slots. As far as the cost share and premiums, the copays really add up. So if you're living with MS, you're not only getting prescriptions, but you're going to PT, OT, speech, you're getting MRIs, labs, possibly mental health care and primary care. So any payment of any kind per month for these low, moderate income people makes it so that they do not go to their appointments. This is something we hear every day. And so we applaud you in really reversing that and no longer allowing those horrible copays and premiums. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Comment.
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thanks, Bill. I'm used to saying Madam Chair and Mr. Chairman after the legislative session. Do I speak to the chair?
Mr. Chairman.
Members of the Medicaid Advisory Committee, Colin Bio with Health Action New Mexico, really do want to applaud the Human Services Department and the governor for not only using these waiver amendments to rescind some of the harmful provisions, including the premiums, copays, and changes to retroactive coverage, but also using it as an opportunity to improve upon the waiver with the changes to the home visiting, as well as the community support benefits. We think it's great that you've taken a look at the evidence on all of these programs and some of the changes that were being proposed and ultimately adopted and moved towards the ones that were supported by the evidence, so we really appreciate that. Also, during the session, we very much appreciated that the department was fighting for the Medicaid budget and really advocating for the beneficiaries of the program. That was something that, as advocates, we hadn't seen for some time, and it's fantastic to see a department that's really fighting for every dollar so that we one, are paying our providers as much as they need to be paid, but also making sure that especially patients have access to the services. There is one question. I don't know if this is the right form for registering it, but I thought it might be helpful just to put it out there. And if there is an answer available now, that would be great. The question is whether those folks who did incur medical costs as a result of the changes that have been put into effect regarding retroactive coverage since January 1st, if they will be held harmless now that if the amendment gets accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's it. I think the last piece to say is just also thanking the department for engaging on the Medicaid buy-in. Advocates are very much looking forward to engaging with the department and the stakeholders to see that there's a model that's adopted for New Mexico that's focused on those folks who are uninsured or having serious issues with affordability of coverage right now. We thank all those who helped provide input during the first phase of the study and are very much looking forward to the next phase. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your remarks. Do we have a response to the question concerning whether people are held harmless? And I guess my question would be, did we ever fully implement that piece of the amendment before?
So, Kathy, did you want to answer about the logistics of responses?
Yeah, we and unfortunately with the public comment session, we're not allowed to provide a response right now. But I think that's something that we can do. We can put on the website or something. But.
Yeah, okay. We certainly will take that back.
And certainly at subsequent Medicaid Advisory Committee meetings, we can address those things. Okay, I know Carolyn had a comment, and we have another one back here. Oh, Bill's here. Okay, good.
Hi, I'm Bill Jordan with New Mexico Voices for Children. We want to stand in support of the proposed waiver changes. And forgive me if I don't do this right, because I'm not used to standing up in front of HSD and supporting the waiver change to the waiver. It's been a lot of years. But I still remember how to say thank you and how grateful we are that we feel like the department really has the health and the best interests of kids and families in mind. It feels very different. The legislative session showed that it was very different, and the proposed changes also show a new direction. We're very excited and very grateful for that. So please pass along our gratitude to the governor, the secretary, and all of your team for turning the ship in a new direction and having the best interests of New Mexicans at heart. We're very grateful and very supportive of the changes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, yes, Carolyn.
Carolyn Montoya, I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner, and I also want to commend the department for what they are doing in terms of child health. And my focus is on the, I'm just looking at an article at the same time, is on the home visiting program. And part of the reason I think that money was allocated for this is there was a very good article in 2016 called Home Visiting and Use of Infant Healthcare. It's a randomized clinical trial, and what it demonstrated, this was done in the Santa Fe area, and it demonstrated that infants who had home visits by nurses had less health problems, less health needs throughout the year. So this is economically good as well, not to mention good for families. And so I would just advocate as much as possible to increase this in as many counties as possible. And what I don't want y'all to forget is we need to do studies on this in order to continue it, because we are able to show what a difference it makes. So as these are going forward, I would definitely, this is an article by Kilburn and Cannon, and the College of Nursing would be, at the University of New Mexico, would be happy to be involved in this research. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nancy Rodriguez.
Hi, Nancy Rodriguez with the New Mexico Alliance for School-Based Healthcare. At the risk of sounding like a broken record, our organization also stands in support of these amendments and wants to share our gratitude. School-based health centers, 65% of them are run by federally qualified health centers. and often are in the position to absorb the cost of health care for confidential visits in the behavioral health and reproductive health realm as it is. So should they have been in the position to absorb the cost of co-pays for visits, it could have killed the school-based health center program in the state. So we are very excited about these amendments. And one additional word of support to the home visiting program that a number of people have touched on. We're really excited about this expansion. A lot of people picture school-based health as serving teens, but school-based health centers around the state serve 0 to 100, and teen parents, which is a very vulnerable population, are almost typically getting their care to begin with in a school-based health center from that very first pregnancy test. And they're in a position to refer out. And we'd love to see the department look at where there are high rates of teen pregnancy when you're making selection about which counties get access to home visiting. And we'd love to see that program built to support that population. The state's grads program is a gem in this state. And I think I can't speak for their program, but I feel confident that they're in a position to be supportive and refer to home visiting. And certainly school-based health centers can refer to home visiting for teen parents that they see, so that students and teen parents can not only get early prenatal care, but they can make sure that their infants get the services they need. So once again, thank you to the department, and our organization is very supportive of these changes. Thanks.
Thank you, Nancy. Okay, Ruth Hoffman.
Yes, to bring a little history to this, a little bit more short term, as this waiver was being developed, there were subcommittees of this body, of the Medicaid Advisory Committee, on different topics. And as a member of the one on cost sharing, and that committee voted not to have any cost sharing in the waiver, and that advice of the subcommittee was ignored. And so I'd like to thank you personally for reversing that decision, which we did spend a lot of time on and came on with an adverse decision that was not implemented. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth. Okay, Jim.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Jackson. And I'd like to begin, I think I can speak for Disability Rights New Mexico, and also saying we support all five of the proposed amendments to Centennial Care 2.0. I think they'll make a really important difference. But I want to step back and just speak for myself for a minute on a couple of other observations. First, please pass on to the governor our thanks not only for supporting the Medicaid appropriation and so on, but also signing into law some other bills that will increase access to Medicaid and to other insurance coverage for people with disabilities. And just as two quick examples, House Bill 322, the autism insurance bill, and 436, incorporating the ACA protections into state law, which will have a significant impact on people with pre-existing conditions. I want to also encourage you, not specifically related to the amendments, but with respect to implementation of Centennial Care 2.0, I really want to encourage the department to review and address what seems to be the steady decline in the average utilization of personal care services and some other long-term benefits under Centennial Care. And in particular, and sort of toward that end, I'd really encourage the department to provide on an ongoing basis, post it, publicize it, whatever, information and data about the utilization of long-term services. We have a great community benefit. It's one of the best aspects, in my opinion, of Centennial Care 2.0. You don't have to get a waiver slot to get long-term services through the community benefit, but the impression that many of us are under is that the average hours of personal care service continue to come down, and it's still a bit of a mystery how many people are getting the various services that are covered under the community benefit. So we'd encourage you to draw back the curtain from that and give some information to the public about how many people are getting these services and so on. Just one last comment on a personal level. Having been a member of the Medicaid Advisory Committee, and it's a new administration, I want to follow up sort of on Ruth's comment. I'd really encourage the department to solicit advice. This is the Medicaid Advisory Committee. certainly been true over the years that I have spent working on these issues, that it's rare, frankly, for the department to solicit advice from the committee. You give them a lot of information. That's why a lot of us come to these meetings. But it is an advisory committee, and I encourage the new administration to look at. You got a great group of diverse folks on this committee. We encourage you to solicit and hopefully, as often as you can, actually follow that advice. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, Jeff.
Mr. Chair, Nicole, Jeff Dye with the New Mexico Hospital Association, and hopefully you have our written comments that we submitted earlier. But I just wanted to say we are supportive of all five of the amendments as proposed, and in particular, the issue around copays and the retroactive eligibility, which are the right thing to do for individual beneficiaries, but those in particular put a particular administrative burden and a cost on hospitals that are sometimes standing in the situation of having to not have copays paid and eat that cost, and as well as being able to provide the retroactive care under the retro situation. So we support all the amendments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay, any other? Yes, we have a comment back here.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I am in support of the amount. My name is Nat Dean. I'm a disability advocate, and I'm located in Santa Fe. I'm in support of the amendments, and I think it's a new journey we're on, and that's really exciting. I have a couple of concerns regarding care coordination, especially when it's at the NFLOC level, nursing facility level of care in the home. There seems to be a lot of difficulty for the participants that I'm inheriting outside of MCOs, that the interaction between care coordinators and the subscribers, or whatever you want to call them, are receiving. So that is, I think, maybe because the MCO coverage or contracts, there may be not enough training with new MCO in place. It may be that some MCOs inherited a lot of clients, a lot of participants very quickly. So I'm finding that there's a lack of follow-up. And as an advocate who then steps in, I'm then trying to soothe the member getting the care from the care coordination. And what then usually happens is the person says, it's too hard for me, I'm not gonna do it. And then we lose them, they fall through the cracks. And when you inherit them next time, it's more expensive. An example, and I know that training is taking place because I was at a care coordination interview last Friday, and the care coordinator brought someone who I don't think had even read the interview questions. And in the process of doing the ACE, which is trauma before the age of 14, it traumatized the applicant even more because the way the questions were asked was discussing trauma as opposed to asking a question about trauma. So if there's anything that I can do to help, or any of us can do to help in the training aspect, even pretend to be clients having an intake done, I think this is really important, because if we're gonna expand that access or even have access, I think if we do it well, people don't fall through the cracks and then we lose them. I think that kind of clumsiness can be worked with, and I think we can do it as a team. So I don't think it's impossible at all. The other thing is I echo Mr. Jackson's comments that the makeup of the MAC membership might want to include more people from other areas that might not have had representation in the past. And thank you so much for the work that all of you do, because I know this is not easy. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any other comments? Yes, Eileen.
Thank you. Eileen Good, New Mexico Primary Care Association. I want to just echo the comments that have been made prior to my own in terms of supporting these amendments. The Primary Care Association in particular is very supportive of the elimination of co-pays and premiums, primarily because of the administrative burden that would have been placed on everyone, including the clinics that are members of our association. So thank you for seeking to do away with those. And then reinstating the retroactive coverage is extremely important to my membership. So thank you for doing this and for all that you're doing. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen. Any other comments? Yes, okay. Michael. Yep.
Good afternoon. Michael Spanier, just remarks for me personally, not representing anyone else. Been around these issues for almost as long as the chairman. And
that could have gone without saying.
Yeah, well, I think you got me in January with a similar remark. I just want to stand in support of particularly the decision to eliminate the premiums. Just appreciate that, and the folks I work with in the different counties are appreciative of that amendment as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Okay, anyone else?
Okay.
Is anyone on the phone? Yes. Who wishes to make any comments on the amendments to the waiver application? Hearing no response, I'm assuming no one's on the phone.
Never heard anybody
Okay. Okay. I think we have gotten a very good level of feedback. That's more public comment than I'm used to getting when it's not on an issue like this. But okay, if there are no further comments, I'll ask Nicole if there's any other additional issues you wish to address.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I would just thank all of you for your comments and partnership. I know someone said it felt redundant, but the feedback is much appreciated. It very much does help us in our ongoing discussions with CMS. So thank you all for being here and taking the time today.
Thank you all very much. Yes.
Thank you for getting a larger room.
Oh, yeah. I should say, this is kind of an... Yes. Well, thank you. And actually, I meant to bring this up, so thank you for the reminder. This is a little bigger room, but a little bit of an awkward setup. And so we are moving to our new building on July 1st. We should be there at 1 Plaza La Prensa. And we have a room big enough to accommodate the MAC meeting. So we are thrilled to have a space all our own, and you guys won't have to travel to various locations. So as long as all goes smoothly, we'll send out an announcement for the next meeting, letting you all know that we'll be at the new spot, and hopefully there going forward.
Good. And that's south of Santa Fe, so it's plenty of room there. So
yeah.
Okay. Okay, seeing that there are no other items on the agenda and that we have completed public comment, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion.
So moved by Dale Tinker, seconded by Mary Eden. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Quick. Now let's have a minute.
Yeah.